us on the summit today is Derek Brose. Derek, welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Derek, you're a Houston-based investigative journalist, activist, radio show host, author. You're running for mayor. You've educated the city council there in Houston very effectively on 5G. You've overcome some challenges in your life, and we can get into those and get into your conscious path as well. You're merging a conscious, intentional path with your activism in a beautiful way. So, really looking forward to this conversation. You know, you're a leader in this. Can you give us a bit of a background on who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. So, again, thank you for having me and let me be a part of this wonderful event. Just such an important thing to be doing right now. So I'm 34 years old. I've been in Houston my entire life. I've grown up around the inner city of Houston. I've been doing the things you mentioned for about the last decade. But prior to that, as you said, I did have some struggles. In 2005, I got into drugs and drug addiction and found myself locked up. In 2005, I ended up doing about 18 months in Texas state institutions behind bars. And that was really where I started to question the path that I was on, you know, challenge the things I was doing, started to do some introspection, get into meditation, and really start to uncover a lot of my own healing and my need for healing through, you know, looking at my traumas and my familial relationships. And so that was the beginning of a process that obviously is a lifelong process and continues to this day. But it was through those experiences that I first, when I got released from prison for the last time and got off parole, I really just started to look at the world with fresh eyes. I felt like I'd gotten through not only addiction, but lots of depression and struggles with suicide and things of that sort. And it felt like I was really looking at the world for the first time, where I could just stop and like enjoy a sunset or something. Things that I would have never been interested in before. All of a sudden, you know, I was just wanting to take in the beauty of the world. And along with that, I remembered and realized that I'm an intelligent person that likes to read and likes to learn and wants to understand the world. And I started to just dive down those rabbit holes, as they say, and started to look at the drug war, for example, and then looked at, I really definitely started to focus on health in the beginning. It's interesting, you know, I'm kind of making a full circle here, because one of the first things I did was really get into health and question things like water fluoridation, like question whether or not I wanted a microwave in my house, just as simple as those sort of things, like everything, just started rethinking everything, went and placed my microwave on the edge of the street with a note for somebody that said, you know, this may cause cancer, please don't use it. It was gone within 5 minutes, somebody came and took it. But it was like just starting to make those life changes. And in that process, I also just started to look at my own city and wanted to get involved in activism. I launched an activist blog and community called the Houston Freethinkers in 2010. We were active for about 8 years, and, you know, such a wide range of things from the, you know, the typical activist stuff, protests, rallies, marches, civil disobedience, but also building community gardens, hosting skill shares, hosting documentary screenings, hosting benefit shows for different causes, and just trying to raise awareness. And then I got into journalism along the way. I didn't go to school for journalism. I just have a natural, I think, inclination to be curious and to enjoy putting people in positions of power on camera and asking them difficult questions that I know that they're not too comfortable with. I get a kick out of that. And so that's just developed into a path over the last 9 years I've been doing this now. And so I've written for nearly every website out there in the independent media that exists, alternative independent media. I have my own website and channel called The Conscious Resistance, which, as you said, sort of tries to merge the activist world and the awareness raising world with the spiritual path of uncovering our trauma. Because of the things I've been through, I understand the importance of bringing those things together, not just, you know, yelling at the government about 5G or yelling at Verizon about 5G, but also kind of going inward and seeing what role we play in the grand scheme of things and how we are contributing to some of the problems, things like that. So yeah, that's what I've been up to and what I'm involved in, and 5G has become increasingly important in my work in the last year.
That's outstanding. I look forward to getting to that, those deeper, you know, consciousness and life path related questions. And that's a hugely inspiring story of having, you know, come back and, you know, resurrected your life from being to that point where now you're such an influential and inspiring social leader. But I'd like to first dive into what led you to specifically, you know, begin researching 5G, and how did that whole process come about, and what are some of the key things that you've learned?
So, you know, I have been aware, like I was saying, about health and, you know, sort of EMF generally. And over the years of my research, I've come across an article or a study or so that was pointing at potential dangers of cell phones and things of that sort. And I also, you know, in this line of work, you notice pretty quickly what topics are going to get you called or labeled a conspiracy theorist, or you don't understand science, or, you know, these sort of derogatory attacks. And that was the feeling that I got every time I even mentioned or tried to bring some, you know, something up about cell phones, like, hey guys, have you ever heard about this cell phone, this or that? And I realized, okay, there's some pushback, but I kind of set it aside for a little while. And in late 2018, I was coming back to Houston after being on the road for a while, and I really wanted to just dive back into local journalism. And I happened to just be, you know, the universe brought me home at the right time. And I was literally coming back into Houston the week that the mayor of Houston and the city of Houston were announcing a partnership. Well, they had already announced a partnership with Verizon, but they were announcing that they were going to have this press conference where they were going to have the world's first 5G customer. And it was the beginning of the 5G rollout in Houston. So right as I was coming home and looking for a story, and like I said, somewhat aware of the issues surrounding this technologies and 5G itself, I'm like, wow, my city, the city I live in, is going to be the test site for this. So I went down there and I was able to interview the mayor and interview Hans Vestberg, who's the CEO of Verizon, and ask them both to their faces about the privacy concerns, the health concerns, just generally the concerns about 5G. And both of the men denied having any awareness or, you know, knowing anything about this. And that was the beginning of it for me, like locally, you know, definitely I started to look into the fact that the mayor here in Houston, he first announced a partnership with Verizon in the summer of 2018. A couple months later, he received the 5G Wireless Champion Award from the CTIA, the Cellular Telephone Internet Association, which I'm sure your audience is aware is the lobby for the big telecom, big wireless companies. So they gave him the 5G Wireless Champion Award for removing all restrictions and all roadblocks to just make it as easy as possible for them to roll it out. And then a couple months later, they're announcing the world's first 5G customer. And so I could see these obvious conflicts of interest. And, you know, I've been to city council dozens and dozens of times since 2010 for a variety of issues, water fluoridation, homeless issues, police violence, you know, you name it. I've gone there and tried to take that route. But what I think the average person thinks this is the way we're supposed to handle situations in our city or our town, right? You go to the council, you express your opinion, maybe they hear you, something gets done. And maybe it works that way in some other places, but in the city of Houston, with 3.5 million people, there's this 16-member council and the mayor who are controlling where all the taxpayer money goes, and they're signing contracts every week and budgets and this and that, and nobody pays attention. I mean, nobody's there. Sometimes there's people who come down there for their issues, but, you know, they tell you 2 minutes, your time's up, 3 minutes, your time's up, next. You know, they don't really, I've seen plenty of people over the years, this is my point, is I've seen plenty of the people over the years come there with valid concerns, taking time off of work, taking time off of school, they get all dressed up, they've got a speech written, and they go up there and they're nervous, and then they share their thoughts for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and the city council says next, and no feedback, no follow-up. Nothing. And I've seen so many people become disheartened from this process. But I do also know that it is a valuable tool and as far as using propaganda to promote a message. And what I mean by that is when I go down to city council, where I live right here, I'm about a 10-minute bike ride downtown. So get on my bike, go down there. I have all the issues in my head, planned out what I want to talk about, wait for a couple hours for my little 2 to 3 minutes to speak, spread that message and share those ideas. And I've gone now about 6 times for 5G in the last few months, and I've sent them emails, all the studies that you guys are aware of, that I'm sure some of the studies we're going to be talking about on the summit. I've sent them information on the FCC taking control of the rollout, you know, just everything, every angle that you can think of, privacy, health, local control, sent them emails, sent them studies, sent them references. I've conducted my own interviews and sent this to them. Not a single one has been answered. Not a single one has been even, you know, hey, thank you for this, we'll get to it, or something like that. So I use city council as a way to go there, knowing that more than likely they're not going to respond to me. Like I said, the mayor's already in the back pocket of Verizon. I don't know how many other council members might be as well. But I use that as a way to go up there to spread these ideas. There are a couple council members who are at least a little bit sympathetic. One of them is a chiropractor, health advocate. So he's always down to talk about health issues, and he's always really welcoming and supportive. So that'll give me a couple extra minutes to talk, you know, it kind of extends my little 2 or 3 minutes to a 5 or 6, 7 minute video. And then I go home and I wait for them to upload it to the city website, and I rip it off their website and I upload it on my channel, and then it gets, you know, thousands more views than it would ever get just sitting on the city website.
Oh.
So I like, that's what I say, is I go there knowing full well that the city council isn't going to hear me. They're not going to, you know, just decide to listen all of a sudden one day, but it's a tool that I can use to show people, hey, you can go out there, you can communicate to these people. Even if they're not listening, you can go out there, you can inform them. And what I've said in one of the videos and one of the visits I made is that in another regard, I'm trying to get it on the record that they have been informed. So in the future, if there are lawsuits, if there are people who are getting sick, and you know, hopefully nobody's, you know, I don't know, wherever it goes, if people end up getting sick or there's lawsuits regarding health, regarding privacy invasions, regarding eminent domain, what have you, there's a record showing that these city council members have been made aware of that. And that's another one of the reasons I've chosen to go there.
Yeah, I mean, my research is that they're way more liable than they think they are, city councilors and city governments. And there's a lawyer, Harry Lehman in California, who's been doing some excellent work educating his local city officials of their liability. So yeah, that's a basis, isn't it? Like notifying, getting it on the record, and then there's a basis for something like criminal negligence.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that's important, even, you know, because the summit's about solutions, right? And that's my work is always going to try to take solution-based approach. If I'm going to talk to somebody about an issue, I would like to be able to say, and here's something you can do about it, right? At the very least, what we can do, even if we have city council members or town council members or whatever you have in your area, supervisors, et cetera, and if they're not willing to listen, you can still go out there. You know, you can take it off the city's website like I'm doing, or you can take your own camera and have a friend record. Just put it on the record that these people are being made aware of the information that you have, and bring them physical documents to the council. Make sure that there's, you know, here they are all receiving the documents. There's no claims. Like maybe they can claim, oh, it went to the spam. We didn't see it. It went into our spam inbox, you know, when you sent those emails. I've actually told them, check your spam, like this, you know, and I've given them physical documents too, because I want to make sure that there's no excuse that this information has been passed along. And really, I don't think there should be an excuse. As an elected member of a town council or a city government or anything like that, you would expect, or I believe most people would want, to have members who are informed on the topics they care about. And the reality is most of them are not.
That's exactly right. And thanks for mentioning that, because, you know, I believe that we don't want to start out in the position that our local government officials are adversaries, are on the other side. We need to understand that there's so much happening, you know, at this time, and they're being asked to be educated on so many different topics that most of them don't know, right? And so we want to give them a full opportunity to be part of the solution, to be part of the discussion. And if later, if need be, if they're, you know, failing to ignore, or if they're failing to recognize the reality of the situation and the risk and the harm, then they can be held accountable, then they can be held liable. So that's an important part of the message as well, is they have to do the right thing, or else it's going to come back to bite them. But to really come from that, and maybe, you know, we can get into this intentional piece, this conscious piece, really come from that place where we're on this together, right? Nobody gets like a get out of jail free card. So maybe share us with that. So you're in your organization, Conscious Resistance, and on your YouTube videos, I mean, you have like 30 some thousand subscribers, right?
Yeah, there's about 30,000 subscribers on there. Yeah, so, you know, I think I get where you're going with this. I do want people to understand that when you're trying to inform somebody, when you're trying to, because I guess, you know, what we're focused on here is the solutions, right? So if you're not a doctor, if you're not a health professional, if you're not a scientist, but you are a concerned individual, you live wherever you live and you see 5G growing, especially very quickly in the United States, and you want to go to town council, you want to go to these different places, you want to write letters, you want to make phone calls. In the age of the internet, in the age of social media, it is very easy, I think, to fall into an us versus them mentality, as you were sort of pointing at a moment ago. And I, you know, yeah, there are definitely, like I said, the mayor here in the city I live in is obviously in the back pocket of Verizon. Like, it's clear to me at this point, like, this guy does not care no matter what I say to him. The only thing I can get from him is I love 5G. So I understand that, and I approach the situation with that. But I also recognize that he's still a human being. Maybe there's some way to reach him. Maybe there's a different approach. You know, at the end of the day, there are corrupt people. There are people who we could describe as immoral or evil or whatever words you want to use. But there are also lots of people who truly are ignorant. And just don't know. I mean, we would assume that the city council would have some awareness of all the different issues we care about, but that's not always accurate, what I've found. And I can give them a little bit of leeway and say, okay, well, they're having meetings and they're arranging city budgets and this and that. But the goal would be to have individuals like, you know, those people watching, everybody listening, is to go inform them. So they're not going to have time to watch all the YouTube videos you've been watching. They're not going to have time to sit here and watch this summit. They're not going to have time to, you know, just watch all the documentaries and all the things that you have become informed and look at the papers, because, you know, the reality of the matter is, if you're running like over here, if you're in the city of Houston, this massive city, they've probably got quite a bit of other things going on. And so I'll sympathize and empathize with that and say, perhaps they haven't had the time. So it is important, I think, to approach from a compassionate standpoint, not to just come in there. You know, I don't go into the city council and just accuse them all of being bought off, corrupt, paid for, you know, whatever. I could take that approach, and maybe that would make for an interesting YouTube video, but it really wouldn't further my goals of trying to educate them and to also educate the viewer who might be listening and who has no awareness of this. Like, wow, this guy is talking very well spoken. He's got some points that I've never heard of. Maybe I should look further into this, you know. So on one level, have compassion for the people you're trying to reach, whether that's city council members, governors, the president, or your neighbors. And at the same time, recognize that communicating at a place like city council or some similar event like that, a town meeting, homeowners association, I've had people reach out to me, you know, because of these videos. The first one I did, the first city council video I did, is almost at 900,000 views. For whatever reason, it just particularly took off and went really viral. So I've had people reach out to me from all over the world asking these questions, asking ideas on how can I get involved? How can I, you know, connect to people like yourself who are doing things like this? So there is a very deep need and want for people who want to get involved and want to find a way. Sometimes, you know, we can get into the solutions of that in a moment as well, but I just think it's important to definitely recognize that if you're out there on the streets trying to educate people about a topic you care about, whether it's 5G, it's EMF, whatever issue you're talking about, this is a little bit more broadly, look at them like the human being that they are. You know, even if they think you're crazy and they say, yo, you're a conspiracy theorist, you think cell phones are bad for me, or you think this, whatever, just let it go. Let it go, because at the end of the day, the way that I've always approached it is that when you're trying to spread awareness, you're trying to reach everyone, even the people who might think that you're crazy. You're doing this for the benefit of them. Even if they dismiss you, they think you're a quack, they think you don't understand science, whatever they may say, you're trying to help them at the end of the day too. So, you know, let that go and just come from a place of compassion to try to reach people, whether that means council members, government officials, your friends, your neighbors. And, you know, come from that place of caring and understanding, of saying, like, look, I care about you. I care about the city I live in. I care about the town I live in. I want to live in a place that's safe for all of us. And I would really appreciate if you look at this information, if you check out this document, or if you watch this video, what have you. And everybody's going to have a different approach. Some people will be very... some people are very aware of their health concerns, right? So that's why I take multiple approaches with 5G. I talk about the health, the privacy, and the kind of local control, eminent domain sort of aspect, property rights. Because some people, honestly, I've heard, and I'm sure you've heard things like this, heard people say, well, everything gives us cancer, or everything, you know, is going to get you sick. So they sort of just dismiss, I guess I shouldn't worry about it. Other folks will say, well, we don't have privacy anyway, so why should I care if 5G is going to, you know, take away our privacy, you know? But maybe they don't take one of those arguments, but one of them will reach them. Maybe they don't care about their health, but they might care about privacy. Maybe they don't care about health or privacy, but they don't want a tower right outside their window, you know, or they don't want to have to deal with some weird looking device right on their street. You know, there's multiple ways to reach people. So I think that's important as well, as when you're approaching people, come with compassion and try to meet them where they're at.
Yeah, good. So let's kind of dive into those three different areas. What does our audience need to be aware of some key problems that to help, you know, crystallize for our audience the key problems in each of those three areas, and what have you noticed is effective, you know, facts or effective strategies that really land, or studies, or, you know, what's really working when you're communicating with people, whether it's in person or on video?
Yeah, so as I said, the main three arguments that I take, and we'll go through each of them, the health, obviously, privacy, and then the, which you could call local control, kind of eminent domain property rights aspect of it. So on the health front, you know, I have always approached this as the person who is, I'm in a journal, investigative journalist, I'm a researcher, I'm more than capable of understanding, you know, studies and having them, you know, read to me, read back to me, and seeing the reflections of the people involved in the studies, but I also make it clear, like, look, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but that doesn't preclude you from being able to understand science. You know, so I think that's important for people to understand. There's often this approach that some people take. I've seen this dozens of times. Hey, I've worked in the telecom industry for a dozen years. Nothing's wrong, you know, or hey, I have a degree in radiation, this or that, you know, and that's great. It's great when people have degrees. And I think that if that happens, if somebody comes in and tries to play the credentialist game and says, like, look, I've got a title or a letter next to my name, you don't know anything, you know, tell them, thank you. I appreciate the time that you put into this particular area of research. However, having those degrees does not necessarily make one an expert in 5G or make one an expert in how this works or make one an expert in the corruption that has got us to the place where we're at now, because that's a big thing to understand. Some folks will come in and say, if the FCC, you know, if this was dangerous, the FCC would have done something about it. The FDA would have done something about it. You know, this sort of blind trust in government or in authority generally, which is, I think, a bigger problem that we have. Folks just assume that if it was dangerous, they would have already known about it. You know, the media would be doing their job and telling us this. So there's a lot of assumptions that come into this. For one, the assumption that, you know, all the government officials are just good, honest people and that there's no corruption going on. And the assumption that the media itself is doing actual journalism and not also connected to some of the same people. So we have to be able to approach people understanding those assumptions. So if you're coming to a situation, you're talking about health, and somebody's already coming into the conversation with their assumption that the government mandated science is fact, is based on, you know, accurate testing standards and is up to date, well, then you're going to be kind of going up, facing an uphill battle. You know what I mean? Because you're going to have to not only get this person to look at the health arguments, but also maybe have to show them that, look, I'm not sure if you're aware, but check out this paper from Harvard that shows the FCC being captured, or check out this, you know, wargaming memo, or, you know, different pieces of evidence that we have now that shows the amount of corruption that exists in the agencies that are supposed to regulate this type of technology. And then you also, I think, it'd be important to point out the way that the media shapes the conversation, you know, and the reason I bring these points up, because I'm talking about health, but what I'm saying is that it's more than just health, it's more than just 5G. We're dealing with a bigger kind of picture here, which is the fact that there is corruption that exists in the U.S. government, and there is corruption that exists in the corporate mainstream media. And because of that, issues like 5G get suppressed, or the science that is promoted to the average person is that government mandated, often corporate funded science. So that's, you know, part of the battle that you're going against. I mean, most recently we had the New York Times say that people who question 5G are like falling prey to Russian propaganda, you know, things like that. Like, so they're trying to paint any of us who are asking these questions as just, you know, either useful idiots or just ignorant people. So go into these discussions being aware of that you might be dealing with a person who has been heavily propagandized from the media to the government industry and the corporate industry themselves. So, and if they know anything about 5G at this point, probably the average person only knows the commercials they've seen from Verizon, the commercials they've seen from Sprint or from AT&T. That's what I've seen in my experience at least. So when you're coming into these discussions, just be aware of that. But as far as the health, I myself, as a journalist, not as a scientist, I've interviewed Dr. Martin Paul of Washington State University. I've interviewed some of the folks from the Environmental Health Trust, and try to put myself in a position where I can interview other experts. Since I myself don't have that degree, don't have that title, that letter next to my name, but I'm a researcher, I'm a journalist, that's what my job is to do, is to go gather information, to compare that data, and then I share it with my audience, and then I let them decide. So I think that's a good approach to take, is that you just find the interviews that you think fit well and that you're trying to share it with your mom. Okay, you found an hour-long interview. Your mom's not going to listen to an hour-long interview, maybe. So you find a 15-minute interview that, you know, is with an expert that really breaks it down and gets those key points, and just ask mom, like, just give 15 minutes of your day. Just sit down and watch this, because I need you to understand. I care about your health. I want you to be safe. Things of that sort, you know, or your partner, or your spouse, whatever you have, and really just be able to, again, meet them where they're at and communicate the message. So when it comes to health, I think that's what it's important to do, is find the experts that are communicating the message in a really positive way. And I don't necessarily want to endorse any particular one individual, but there are, as the audience of this summit knows, there are plenty of experts out there that are promoting this information and doing lots of good work. And it's important to have that information, because somebody will come to you and say, you're not a scientist. you're not a doctor, you're not a health professional, so I shouldn't listen to you. But you can show them, well, here are the health professionals, here are the doctors, here are the scientists that are talking about this, and this is what I think you should look at. My main concerns, you know, obviously there's potential cancer concerns. I think that a more immediate concern regarding health for me personally would be the loss of sleep and anxiety that is being shown to be connected to having the smart meter next to you, or the Wi-Fi router running all night, or the Bluetooth, you know, just pulsing through you all the time. You know, I've tried to just start unplugging the Wi-Fi every night, try to stay connected to the broadband as much as possible, just, you know, rewire the house through through Ethernet cables as much as possible, and take these small steps, like reduce my use of Bluetooth and these kind of devices, because with the work I do, I am on a laptop, like, you know, 70-80% of the day, you know, and I try to put some distance between myself. I make sure I have time away from it. But at the end of the day, it's a part of my work, so I'm trying to take precautions. And I do think that when we're getting into an area where people are getting anxiety, people are getting stress, they're getting lack of sleep, that is what leads to a lot of other things, whether the cancer is coming directly from the EMFs themselves or because their body is breaking down from not being able to take care of itself. Pulsations that are taking place. So when it comes to health, I'm particularly concerned about that and where that leads to with the, you know, the other areas. Just briefly, when it comes to privacy, I think that, you know, for those who aren't aware, the reason there are privacy concerns is because 5G is heralding the Internet of Things, what they call the Internet of Things, which is the smartphones, the smart houses, the smart fridge, the driverless cars, the robot assistants, virtual reality, augmented reality, smart streetlights, sensors in the street, you know, this whole futuristic world that movies have been predicting, and that all the cities want, like the mayor of Houston wants, turned Houston into the first smart city in the country. All of that needs 5G to operate, because 5G, as you guys know, it's supposed to be 100 times faster. Some people say 1,000 times faster. And that low latency, that very quick ability to send signals faster than we've ever had, is what they say will allow for driverless vehicles and for all of this to take place. But along with that, along with the installation of the cell towers and the small cells and all this, we're going to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of new sensors around us, you know. So it won't just be the smartphone that has a built-in microphone and that has a built-in, which is basically a listening device in another form. And it's not just, say, a government you need to worry about, or say Verizon, what are they going to do with your data when they're gathering all this information? But the day and age we're in now, there's some 16-year-old kid right now sitting in a garage who knows how to hack your computer remotely. There's just so many brilliant young minds out there, and some who are just doing it for fun, others who maybe have more nefarious purposes. But the reality is, whether you're talking about hackers, just individuals, or government surveillance or corporate surveillance, the increase of sensors and the rollout of this technology of 5G and the Internet of Things is only going to dramatically increase our potential to be surveyed, to be monitored. And I believe it will truly be the end of whatever little bits of privacy that we have left. And again, some people say, hey, I already lost privacy. I carry my cell phone around with me everywhere I go. Google's listening to me, this and that. And that may be true, but I think that's not a reason to just give up. I think that might be a wake-up call to say, hey, well, maybe I should actually start caring about my privacy. And you know, the reason I think privacy is important is because, not only on a philosophical level, I really don't think you're a free person if you don't have the right to have your own private thoughts, you know, with your family, with your loved ones, or, you know, on the activist level, if you can't get together privately with some people and say, hey, let's organize a march or a rally, or let's hold a meeting, and all of your conversations are being listened to, then are you truly free? You know, I mean, I think that's something that we need to ask ourselves. So privacy is still something that I personally am trying to hold on to and trying to raise awareness about. My journalism has focused extensively over the years on surveillance technology, so I'm very aware of the capabilities of just so many different types of devices. And the other aspect of that is 5G is going to increase the use of facial recognition technology as well, because all of these technologies need 5G in order to operate correctly. So when it comes to privacy, those are, I think, the concerns there. Again, try to reach out to people in a way that they, you know, it's not about whether you're doing something wrong. You know, you don't have to be a criminal to be concerned about having privacy. I think that's sort of a misconception that's put out there on purpose. It's just about being a free human being who wants your health, that wants the ability to think your own thoughts, to express your own, you know, your own mindset. And we have to ask ourselves that question again. If you do not have privacy in your own home, are you truly free? And if not, then what the heck are we doing? You know, I mean, I think that's where we got to try to reach at people, get them to think about that. And then when it comes to the more kind of eminent domain, you know, the eminent domain is a phrase for those who may not be familiar. Sometimes it's used when it comes to land where the government wants to build a pipeline and it's going to go through somebody's farm and they offer them some money. Eventually, whether the farmer says yes or no, they're going to take the land and they're going to compensate them, but they're going to take the land by force. So that likely will happen in some cases once we start getting 5G to the rural areas and they start extending towers and cell sites across people's land, because as I'm sure the listeners are aware, these towers have to be installed every 200 to 500 feet in order to operate correctly. So whether you're living out in the country, once it does get to the rural areas, or you're living in the city, we're going to have these towers and these small cells attached to either current infrastructure or building new infrastructure. And there's already been examples from some cities that 5G is being rolled out, where there are literally, I mean, I've even seen it here in Houston. There is literally a box, a 5G box. I had a friend, another activist here, send me all the locations of where the cell sites and the small cells are in the city. So I have the addresses, the locations, the types of what each antenna does, what, you know, so I got a lot of good details on what is related to 5G and what is other infrastructure. There's literally a 5G little small cell box outside of one of the warehouses downtown where people live in, attached to the window, just right outside their window. Their new view is this box, you know, and that is something that's going to take place, and it's already taking place everywhere that this rolls out. So that is a part of the federal takeover of local control. You know, and these two issues are kind of related. In late 2018, the FCC, they passed a rule. I mean, it's not a law. Nobody voted on it. They just passed a rule of their own that says that the local governments no longer have control over the 5G rollout. So that means cities, states, localities, municipalities, towns, what have you, cannot study 5G for health, cannot decide how much to charge the companies, and really can't even have a say in where the towers and cell sites go. There's very limited abilities that the cities have to argue. You can argue aesthetics. So you can say, we don't like the way it looks, so can you make it look like a tree, or can you make it look like a flagpole or something like that? But those are the basic only arguments that a city can make because of this FCC ruling. And then a couple months into early 2019, Donald Trump passed an executive order which sped it up even further, and he said, well, these local governments, they're getting greedy, they want to charge the companies too much money, so we're making a new rule that says they have to approve all small cell sites within 90 days. So your local governments, wherever you're at, when they get, you know, a proposal from Verizon, or it comes in like, hey, we're going to come in with this 5G infrastructure, they're very limited in what they can do. They can't say no. I mean, they could technically. They would face lawsuits, but you'd have to have a local politician or a local member of council to be willing to step up and do that. So far, there's only a couple of cities. There's Danville, California, where their little small town said, you know what, we're gonna stop this. We're gonna go ahead and take the lawsuit. But most people aren't willing to do that. And so because of that, it leaves the cities in a position where they have no say in where these towers go. So I've been contacted by people here in Houston who are trying to work with their homeowners associations. They're trying to get down to the even more local level, down to the neighborhood level, because they're starting to roll it out in their neighborhoods, and they're putting it next to schools, they're putting it next to churches, they're putting it right next to people's homes. And I think that's something that is so real that people can understand. You can say, like, look, even if you don't think there's health concerns here, right, even if you don't care about your privacy, do you really want this thing right outside your window? Do you really, if there's even a small chance, even if you don't buy the science, if there's even a small, minuscule chance that this could cause cancer in your family or your children, do you want it at their school? Do you want it next to your house? Do you want it next to your church? You know, do you want it anywhere? I guess it comes down to, but those are, I think, the key arguments here, the health, the privacy, and the fact that we have, as individuals on the local level, and even those in local government, have no say in what happens with 5G because of the federal government's rollout. So this is another example, I think. You know, you can approach some of your friends who might be a little bit more I don't want to say right wing, but people who care about states' rights and those sort of issues, and show them, like, look, this is a great example of states' rights being trampled on by the federal government. You know, this is the federal government partnering with a corporation, passing a rule. We know that the FCC is made up of former telecom employees, and that they have a revolving door relationship with them. And this is just a great example of that. And it's an unfortunate example because it's affecting us. But so that's another way to get people to think about this. Like, look, this is about your health. This is about privacy. This is about local control being taken away. This is a corporatist issue. This is the government working with the corporation to, you know, pass on something that the taxpayers have to pay for at the end of the day. That's the other, I think, sort of slap in the face, is that the people are paying for this one way or the other, whether you want it or not, whether you think it's dangerous or not, whether you think it's going to spy on you or not, whether you want it outside of your house or next to your school, you're paying for it.
Thanks for that. My question is the federal government's overreach and basically saying that local governments have no rights, is that as cut and dried as they make it appear to be, though? For example, in early April of 2019, there was the California Supreme Court reaffirmed their opinion that local governments, and in that case, the city of San Francisco, does have more rights versus, you know, then does have more rights than the traditional understanding of the 1996 Telecommunication Act would lead them to believe. So I just want to dive into that, because it seems that some governments are getting, local governments are getting creative, you know, when they're made aware of this issue, both the health and or the local, you know, the power grab issue, and they're doing things like recertification fees for, you know, the utilities every year to recertify that their equipment is, you know, approved, and they're doing things like passing laws that are minimum, you know, quote unquote safer. I was going to say safe, but at least it's safer distances of, you know, 1500 feet or whatever it is, you know, distance to, you know, residential or school areas, things like that. So can we just dive into that? Because I don't want to leave the audience thinking that there's no power that local governments really
absolutely
have to do anything, right?
No, absolutely. You're right about that, Josh. Now, and you make a great point there. There's also, just this past week, I saw Syracuse, New York, their local government, they passed a ordinance which would allow them to have random checks of Verizon equipment whenever they called upon it. So like they can take a random sample of any of the equipment and do their own studies and see if it's operating correctly. And the, I don't know if it was the mayor, but one of the council members basically said, like, look, this is what we can do. You know, they're basically saying, like, either we pass this and 5G is going to happen one way or another. They're trying to cram it down our throats. But if we pass this ordinance, we have some level of pushback. And like you said, some people are trying to pass local rules about the distance. They're trying to pass rules about the placement. And Syracuse, like I said, they instituted a rule that said every year they could study a random sample of the cell sites. So there are creative ways that people can try to push back against this. The only fault I see in that, and I don't want to say fault, but the only danger in that is the perception that, well, okay, so Syracuse passed this. Yes, we, you know, we didn't beat 5G, but we passed this measure. But when you look at in particular the Syracuse case, it still says in their language that, you know, they will test the random sample according to the 1996 standards. So they're still going off of standards that we know are already flawed. And I think that's kind of just something we got to be careful of, is that the fight isn't over just because, well, the local government passed the rule saying this is going to take place. But you are right that we're not completely powerless. I do think it's going to be a city by city, town by town, state by state sort of battle. And eventually, if there is a local or a local mayor or governor or somebody who's willing to say, you know what, our citizens have concerns, we're going to put the brakes on this for the moment, regardless of any contracts we've signed, regardless of anything else, we're going to put the brakes on this until we do some further studying. That would open up the city to lawsuits from Verizon and from others, which, that's fine if somebody's willing to take that and then take it all the way up to the Supreme Court, basically put this issue up to the Supreme Court. Like, does the federal government have this right? I think eventually that's probably what it'll make. I mean, who knows how many years that could take, but at the moment we're going to have to put pressure on them, because as I've seen in Houston, and others I think have had similar situations, maybe have some better luck in smaller towns. I think maybe a smaller town you might have better luck because you can be a little closer to the people. And if you can get enough people, you know, 10 or 15 people in a small town can really make a difference. We've seen that in Danville, California. They just flooded all the city council meetings. They flooded all the hearings and everything until the mayor finally admitted, like, look, we've lost local control. You know, we've lost local control, but we're gonna say no to this. We're gonna face lawsuits, but we got to take a stand. You know, so that is, I think, important. There have to be leaders, politicians, and other community leaders who are willing to say, like, we might face a lawsuit, we might, you know, get called some names or whatever, but we're gonna listen to what our community says, and we're gonna take a stand. And I think that just brings it back to you, the individual. What steps are you willing to take to educate your community? Because I'm here in Houston, you know, the listeners are spread out, maybe different parts of the world. So we can share information, we can watch YouTube videos, you can watch documentaries and all that. But at the end of the day, the communities that thrive and survive in the coming decades are going to be the communities that have been able to put up some resistance to this and that have actively got involved. So I do want to say that this is a situation that does need some real world action. I know a lot of us are so used to acting on social media, changing our profile pics or just sharing links, and those things matter. Sharing content does matter. But I think this is a very pertinent example of where real world action is needed, where you might have to go to a meeting and sit there and express your opinion. You might have to, you know, write some emails or make some phone calls. You might have to just get out there and let your local leaders know that this is something that matters to you and that your community cares about, so that they do feel the pressure. Because at the end of the day, like, if you know, the mayor out here, he's got the 5G Wireless Champion Award. So I'm sort of fighting an uphill battle from the beginning. You know, he's already good friends with the company, has shown no interest in even talking about it, has literally ran away from me when I've asked questions. But you might be in a situation where it's not that, you know. The Verizon wants a big city like Houston to embrace this so that other cities follow, you know, and that's why I'm putting so much effort here in Houston, because I think that if we show some amount of resistance, or even getting them to slow down, getting them to ask questions, you know, because they didn't even do an environmental impact study. There was no public comment period. There was nothing that gave the people of Houston a chance to speak up. And so if I could help do something here, that might make it easier for other people in smaller towns to reference and say, look, hey, Houston's putting the brakes on it. Maybe we should reconsider this. But I think, yeah, that's where we're at, is that there are steps that can take place. Like you said, there is some hope on the local level, but the pressure is going to have to be applied in order for the leaders to really recognize that they need to do this.
Exactly. Well said. I would encourage all the viewers to also check out Ray Broomhall in this summit. He's a lawyer in Australia that has had, actually, I don't know if you've heard about this, but he's had results in getting hundreds of small cell sites either removed or prevented from going in with a novel new approach, actually using, you know, the medical system and actually using like the authority that a doctor has, and having a few people in a community or neighborhood go that route. In addition, I helped to co-found an organization called In Power Movement that is doing a commercial liability action, and that's in the works in the currently expanding phase. And so my question is, you know, what happens here? Where do you see all this going? What happens when awareness of the problem reaches a critical threshold and we still have, you know, because of the money and the power involved here, we still have this 5G agenda and the Internet of Things thing still going forward. Like, how do you see this actually playing out, Derek, in terms of, you know, because you're a pretty awake guy, you know, you're a meditator, right? You take care of yourself and you try to bring that in. If you're just going to kind of project your consciousness into the future here as things go forward, you know, how do you see it happening? And again, like, how can we navigate to the most timeline, or the most positive, you know, timeline possible here?
Yeah, well, first I want to say I really appreciate the efforts that you guys have done on the liability issue. I think that's a great approach. I'm really interested to see how that unfolds, so I look forward to that. You know, just like you said, kind of looking into the crystal ball of how this is going to all unfold, I do think we're going to see a patchwork of communities and cities and towns who do push back against 5G and maybe are able to either delay it or, as you said, like get some testing implemented or change the locations and have some level of that. But it also goes back to what you were saying earlier about like safe versus safer, like, you know, how much exposure is safer and how much is, you know, dangerous, like is putting it on the other side of the town just delaying the inevitable that, you know, they say it's going to be everywhere. I do think that there is such, I mean, that we have to understand there's trillions of dollars in the making for 5G. These companies are betting everything, you know, and then there's also kind of getting into more of the geopolitics of the situation. You have the race to 5G, which is creating kind of a battle between China and the US, between the American telecom companies and the Chinese telecom companies like Huawei. So, you know, they're both in a race, both nations are in a race to get their companies to embrace the technology as quick as possible, not only because they want driverless cars and they want all the futuristic, you know, whatever they're promising, but because there are military applications of this technology as well. And there are, you know, intelligence applications that the governments want to use as well. So there are trillions and trillions of dollars invested into making this rollout happen. And I think that's the reality of what we're going up against. Now, I don't want to, you know, sort of say that as to say like that means it's hopeless or anything like that. I don't think anything's hopeless, not even when it's done. Even if, you know, a year from now, we're looking back on this conversation and, you know, I'm looking around my neighborhood and there's 5G towers everywhere, the fight isn't over then. You know, there's still, I think, reasons to put up an active resistance and to voice your opposition to these things, because they're the potential for lawsuits, for like we were saying earlier, as far as holding people accountable. Well, if this does happen, I mean, right now, for example, we're seeing juries hand out billions of dollars against Monsanto based on their product that people now know is associated with cancer. Now, that's still not a good thing, because people have gotten cancer, people have died, and the people who are getting billions of dollars, they're still likely going to die from the results of that. But it's being held accountable now. And so in this field of research, we often talk about comparing cell phones to the way the big tobacco industry, you know, controlled the science and controlled the government agencies. I think that's a perfect analogy, because it's exactly what's taking place. And at the same time, though, looking back, eventually the tobacco companies were exposed. There were lawsuits. You know, of course, lots of people got lung cancer and lots of people got ill in the process. But I do think that there is a potential for, whether or not the 5G rollout completely takes place, that if people start getting sick, and when people start getting sick and they're finding different circumstances that they can directly connect, like I'm living next to this tower and it's, you know, my whole family's sick, then lawsuits are going to start to take place. So this could be, you know, and this is not like the most, maybe the most heartening thing to say, but this could be a decades long battle and struggle. And I think the reality of the situation, unfortunately, is that's the way the world works when it comes to government, that there are no quick fixes. You know, there's not like as far as I know, there's no presidential candidate running on ending 5G or ending the 5G rollout. You know, that's not even like a topic that's being discussed. So it's up to us as individuals to move forward going, you know, as we envision this future of healthy families, thriving communities. And if you don't see 5G as a part of that, continue to raise awareness and continue to move forward in that direction. Also, I think it's important for us to start thinking about defense and protection, right? So if you can't stop it, then how can you protect your family? You know, obviously the unfortunate thing about 5G is it's gonna affect us whether you like it or not. So when you go out into the world and you're surrounded by all these towers and small cells, it's gonna be much more difficult to protect yourself. But inside your home, I sort of briefly mentioned unplugging the Wi-Fi at home. That's, I think, the simplest thing to ask somebody to do. Keeping the phone on airplane mode, not bringing the phone into bed with you, rewiring your house if possible, which it's really not a whole lot of work to start plugging back into Ethernet cables, and you get a faster signal. You know, it's funny that we've been moved towards the world of wireless when it's not actually faster than being connected by a cable. Of course, they're saying 5G is going to change that. My point here, there are individual and community and family decisions we can make to start actively protecting our communities. If you're a parent, reducing the amount of time that you're giving your kids access to these things, because, you know, we're looking into the future. You don't want to see a future where your family is sick, where your children are addicted to these devices. And that's, you know, a whole nother angle on this issue, but where they're addicted to these devices that we know are going to cause detrimental health problems to them. So being able to educate with your family and work together, I think that is going to manifest the vision that many of us want to see, which is a world where, again, we can be thriving as individuals, thriving as healthy communities, and continuing to raise awareness on these topics. Because if we sit by and we do nothing, if we just sit here and, you know, complain on the internet, or just, I guess, accept, throw your hands up like, well, it's over and done, you know, there's nothing I can do about it, well, then, yeah, that's the world we're going to be in. But if we actively take a role in the direction we're taking the world and we're taking our lives, start doing research, not just on the problems. If you've identified the problems, if you've come to the summit and now you're getting a good handle on the problem, I know that there's lots of solutions being presented in the summit as well. Start moving in that direction. You know, if you've got the problem, focus on the solutions now. Continue to educate people, continue to educate yourself, but also present them with the solution. Like I said earlier, you know, it's very difficult sometimes for people to take in a problem because they have, you know, what is known as cognitive dissonance. They don't want to accept something that not only conflicts with what they've been told, like, no, there's no way the cell phone companies would do that. They give me great service and, you know, I have all this great gadgets. They would never lie to me about that. So they're battling that cognitive dissonance. But also for them to accept the problems you're saying without a solution is very difficult for people to do. But if you present them like, look, there's this going on, there's this corruption, there's this happening, there's these health concerns, these privacy concerns, and here are some steps I've taken to help myself and my family. Let me encourage you to do those things, right? So you're presenting the solution. That is gonna help us as individuals and as communities move together in a way that is proactive as opposed to being reactive.
Yeah, really good. Have you ever got any pushback for reporting on 5G?
You know, I've had some interesting experiences. So I, after I started going to city council, I did reach out to, I'm pretty good at generating press releases and usually getting some coverage from some other local, you know, more mainstream media. And I had one of the Fox, there's a, you know, the Fox station here in Houston, there's a journalist by the name of Isaiah Carey, and he has a show called Uncensored, and he promotes himself as somewhat of an investigative guy. And, you know, some of his stuff is kind of just fluffy local things. But I reached out to him, told him about what I was researching and what I was investigating. And he was like, yeah, let's bring you on the show. Let's talk all about it. He saw some of my city council videos. And I went on the show, did a, you know, a little 8-10 minute segment. And I thought it went well. Everything was great. And I asked him when the archive was going to go up, and a couple of days passed, and he said, oh yeah, it should be coming up. And long story short, my archive was never posted. If you go to his website, every single episode of his show, but the one that I'm on, was posted. There's even another show that came on after me promoting 5G in a positive way. So I don't know if he just got, you know, a letter from his editor, or from his boss, or from their corporate sponsors that said like, hey, we can't, you know, don't put that video up. I've also noticed that on his Instagram, he's got quite a few pictures taken with the mayor. He seems to be friends with the mayor, so I don't know if that's part of it because, you know, I've asked the mayor about his connection with Verizon. One way or the other, though, that video never made it out there. And if it wasn't for a friend of mine who happened to DVR the video, I would have no copy of it. I literally had to go to a friend's house and just put my camera to their TV and just record that so I could have my own copy of it, you know. And I, you know, they told me, oh, we're looking for it. All of a sudden they lost it. They couldn't find it. And then I just gave up. Like, these people are, they're never going to put it up. So, you know, I've had things like that, but also just the general, you know, when you go into, when you start to try to be an independent journalist on the local level and you go to local press conferences, you very quickly notice that there is an in group. There's an in crowd. All the local media, they want to make sure they get invited back to the mayor's next events and the city count, you know, the, all the local, they want to be a local celebrity basically. So, if you're in those rooms with the police chief and with the mayor and you're asking tough questions, you might not be invited back, you know? So I've definitely been made to feel uncomfortable, made to feel like I'm not welcome. I have a press badge. And so, I mean, I think anybody should be able to question the officials, though. I kind of think the press badges are silly, but either way, I'm officially allowed in there. And so they can't do anything about it except for just, I guess, make me feel as uncomfortable as possible. So yeah, I've definitely been pushed back against as far as the mayor and his bodyguards. Like when I appear at an event and I'm there to try to question the mayor, they are very aware of me. His bodyguards try to stand in between me and keep me from getting anywhere near him. Just silly things like that, which to me is just so childish. It's just, it's a display of the level of intelligence, I think, that we're dealing with in some cases, unfortunately.
Yeah. But you are running for mayor of Houston in part to raise awareness for, around 5G and call for a moratorium. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I decided, you know, I'm not a, I think your audience has got to know me throughout this interview a little bit, and you can go out and find more about my work. I'm not a politician by any means. In fact, I spent a lot of my work encouraging people to, you know, just kind of stay away from politics and to encourage community action in the way I have in this interview. So it's a little bit of a, a switch for me to kind of go down this road. It's been something I've been thinking about for a couple of months, but mainly one of the main drivers for me choosing to run for mayor of Houston was the 5G issue. So I've spent the last year now researching 5G. And as I said, I put out those city council videos, and they've gotten over 1 million views, both on Facebook and YouTube, and just generated a lot of traffic, a lot of people reaching out to me, such as yourself and others who have seen them. And that I realized, like, well, I didn't intend to be the 5G guy in Houston, but I guess I'll take on that role. And so I've helped, we have a Houstonians Concerned with 5G group here. And I've realized that this is an issue that people care about. So I decided, look, if I can run for mayor, I did some research, I looked into it. It doesn't take a lot of time or effort, you know, to do this. And Houston is a city with 3.5 million people. There's about 4 or 5 candidates running. Less than 200,000 people vote in the election because, in my view, because they're talking about potholes and they're talking about things that most people just, like, it's not anything that people really care about. There's no substance going on. So I have many other issues that I'm trying to shine a light on, but 5G is definitely a central point of that. And the call is for initiating a moratorium on 5G and to allow a public comment period, several public comment periods, where we can get as many people out here and maybe get some other experts out here to the city of Houston to come testify in front of the city about what they know on the health angles and the privacy angles, and then to order for an independent study to take place. And I know that, again, these kind of actions, they threaten the bottom line of Verizon and the mayor and his buddies. But I think that, look, if I can take the platform of being in the mayoral race and people will listen to me just because I'm a candidate for mayor, and that gives me an opportunity to speak about these issues, well, then I'm going to take it. You know, so we just officially launched back in May, and now we have just a couple months to go to the election in November. So it's been an interesting road. We got a couple more months to really hammer down. I've already been accepted into some debates, you know, coming up. So that's really cool to see. We as soon as we launched, people started reaching out. So we're going to see how it goes. We're going to see how things flow. And in come November, I hope at the very least that 5G has become an issue in the city of Houston. You know, if I can't get, you know, the mayor job, and again, it's not really a role that I think I'm fit for per se. I've got a lot of ideas, but my goal is to use my leverage, my audience that I've already built, to shine a light on Houston. So even if you're not in Houston, you know, you can help out with this by just letting people know that, hey, there's a mayoral candidate in the fourth largest city in the country that is talking about putting a moratorium on 5G and doing more studies and more research on this. And I think that alone, again, could make it easier for people in smaller cities. So I'm leveraging all of my independent media contacts, and we are trying to make this campaign go viral and see if we can get some national or potential international coverage see what happens, you know. So I'm excited to see what that'll turn into.
Excellent. Yeah, that's so good to hear that. And we are seeing, you know, in other parts of the world as well, like in Europe, I was interviewing Raphael Mayheim in Switzerland, and he's saying in Switzerland at this time, 5G has become such a hot button issue that it's on par with climate change. You know, climate change is obviously, you know, controversial, and there's you know, evidence of false solutions being propagated there too. But he's saying that is, as it was on the front page of the Geneva Times, I believe, that there's moratoriums passed, but the telcos are pushing anyways. So, and there's hundreds of thousands of views, like on your videos, on, you know, Sasha Stone's video, on other. So this is really bubbling up, and it doesn't really take much. It doesn't really take many people, many committed people in a region or a town or city to come together and bring this awareness and, you know, raise this up and create change, right? So thank you for doing that in Houston and online and with the Conscious Resistance Network, and you're helping people connect locally as well. You're giving a platform to find people where they live, which is something that's very important to me and to our group as well. I think that connecting in person, something new happens when you connect in person, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely, you know, I encourage everybody to get out from behind the internet, whatever the issue is. Obviously, the internet, the social media tools have allowed so many of us to connect over the last decade, but we're also seeing an increase in censorship on those same platforms. So I think it's important for us to make that real world connection. Like you said, something special happens. You know, there's some activists who I've been working with digitally for maybe a decade or so. But once we get face to face and we finally connect in the real world, it makes it even so much easier to work together once you get back to the computers, because now you have a real world connection. You've heard their voice, you've heard, you know, you got to know them a little bit better, and it just makes the bond a little bit stronger in the struggle that you're facing.
Yeah. So just as we close here, Derek, you touched on at the start of your interview, your personal journey. You were, you know, in jail 10 years ago, right? And so you turned your life around. You had an awakening. You made a decision and you followed through with it. And it seems like, you know, we're really being challenged as humanity, and really on an individual level, to really make that decision to choose life, right? To choose to come out of the darkness, to choose to face what fears or resistances that are false beliefs that we've been hanging on to. So if I could ask you to, just as we close here, maybe tap into your deep soul wisdom and guide us through how we could navigate that process of perhaps dealing with the fears, dealing with the illusions, and really, you know, having a shift in our lives where we can go forward in a positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. I think that's a great way to close out the interview. And again, I thank you for just inviting me to be a part of this. And I appreciate everybody who's tuned in to this, such an important topic at this time. And it's important to be focused on solutions. You know, I was talking about tapping into that spiritual wisdom or that spiritual awareness. As I said, I was locked up just about 15 years ago, actually. About 2005 is when I first got locked up. I was arrested the week before I turned 21. And I don't know how many people have truly been in situations where we're like truly, deeply powerless. And what I mean by that, I mean, I don't think we're ever actually powerless, right? But I mean in the physical sense, right? Where I'm in a cage behind bars. There's nobody I can call that's going to be able to save me. I can call my mom and cry to her if I want. I can call my girlfriend. I can call my lawyer. I can call whoever. Nobody's getting me out. You know, I'm looking at the calendar and realizing, wow, I'm not going home till next year at the earliest, right? And being in that space of just fear, you know, I'm in a place where it's, you know, prison and jails are a dangerous place. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of what I consider low-level primitive thinking. People are like, well, you're the same skin color as me, so we're all going to hang out together. You can't talk to that person because they're this skin color, because, you know, just a lot of really tribal mentality, I think. And in that space, I had to accept that, like, okay, I am powerless to get out of here. Like, I have, the only thing I have control right now is my mindset. I'm sitting in this bed. I've got a journal with me, a little notepad, and I just started writing. I started journaling just all of my thoughts and trying to reflect on how I got from, you know, just being this depressed young kid to getting to drugs and being in prison. And I come from a family that has a history of prison. My birth father, he spent my entire life in and out of prisons. He just passed away from a drug overdose in 2018. You know, this is something that's been very prevalent in my life, and I've been around people who are on drugs, in and out of prison. So it was a very big kick in the chest of like, here you are, you know, carrying on the family tradition. I was very angry at myself. I was so mad for doing that. And I honestly think that journaling is one of the first things that started to save me, because I was able to take all these just thoughts out of my head and put them down on paper, start looking at them, kind of reflecting back to them. And the interesting thing is, over time, my handwriting even started to become more precise and slow. Like, I went, you know, the longer, once I accepted, like, okay, I can't get out of here. You know, there's nothing I can do. My lawyer can't make any sort of arrangements. Like, I'm stuck. And then you have to let go of the outside world. You know, when you're in there, people refer to this world as the free world. So you have to let go of that. You know, you see, you can be on the phone all day talking to your wife, your girlfriend, or your husband, or whatever, but it's just going to slow your time down. So you have to sort of let go, which is a very scary thing to think, like, all right, I can't worry about what my friends are up to or what my family's up to. Like, I'm here, so I need to make the most of the situation. And some people get sucked into a rabbit hole of, and I definitely started to do this, of connecting with other criminals, people who have no desire to change themselves. So it has to be a conscious individual decision that I am going to change my life for myself, you know, not because I'm trying to please my parents or please my spouse or please the society or whatever, but because this is the path that's going to be best for me. And I ended up getting just connected to Buddhism. I sort of had a couple synchronicities, and my grandmother started sending me books on Zen Buddhism. And that's one of the places that I really started my spiritual path, is learning Zazen, which is sitting meditation. And I started meditating while I was locked up. And again, in an environment with a lot of fear, a lot of anger, I think it was probably the most perfect place for me to be and to do that. You know, I'd go to bed at night where I would meditate before bed, and I could hear people whispering, you know, whatever they thought I was up to, or what's up with that crazy guy? Why is he sitting there like that? You know, just all this sort of stuff, and just realizing like, it's not about them. This is for me. Like, this is for me because I don't want to continue down this path, you know? And it was a struggle of 3 or 4 years in and out of, like, I did a year and got out, went back, you know, I didn't get it right the first time, but it came from just that individual choice, that personal choice that I wanted something different. And I think this can be applied to any area of life, whether we're talking about 5G or just embracing daily struggles that come along with being a human being. You have to make a commitment that you want something different. Doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. Doesn't mean that everything's going to be handed to you by any means at all. This last 15 years of my life has not been handed to me. To get to the point where I'm at now, it's been a lot of difficult roads and a lot of introspection. There's still more of that to come. There's still more healing to do. There's still more trauma to uncover. There's still more forgiveness to do. And I think all of that is a part of what I consider to be a holistic path. You know, I just want to throw this out for anybody who would like to check it out. I actually wrote a book called The Holistic Self-Assessment, which goes through the entire process that I took myself through in prison. And it's just a real simple book. You can download it for free on my website. You can order it if you want a physical copy. But I wanted to be able to take the ideas and the process that I put myself through in prison and what I've been using over the last 15 years and just put it in a really easy to digest, simple workbook. So the holistic self-assessment is, you know, each chapter asks you a simple question. Who am I? What are my principles? What are my habits? What are my goals? Are my relationships in line with those principles and those goals? And then different exercises from art therapy, from meditation, from just a range of tools and exercises, journaling, that can be helpful to help individuals achieve their goals. Because what I've found with working with a lot of different activists is that we're all struggling in different ways. You know, maybe you've never had a drug addiction, but you have your own struggles in different ways. And that's the human connection that we have. There's a lot of good people with good intentions and lots of potential who fail to accomplish the things they want. They talk about them a lot, or they read all the spiritual books and they have all that information, but they're not actualizing it. And so I tried to put this in a very simple, take a lot of big psychological and spiritual concepts and just whittle them down into the most basic and concise language that anybody could look for and turn it into a workbook. So that's called The Holistic Self-Assessment, and you guys can look that up. And I think that can be a helpful tool for moving in that direction.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Derek. And what's your website?
The website is theconsciousresistance.com. And if anybody's interested in the campaign, it's just my name, DerekBros.com.
Excellent. Derek, thank you so much for joining us on the summit today. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. And we look forward to stay connected with you and just to team up in this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.